The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Jay Kornick with you today. Boy, there's so much news, we just can't hold it back. There's Jim Hightower, a commentary that will be featured later in our show today. But happy to have you with us on Friday the 13th. And I've talked about Friday the 13th before, and I've just read a commentary from a man, a professor, I think at Princeton University, who had written a book about believing in magic, superstitions in everyday life. And he said every 3 months he gets a call from radio and TV stations asking for his comment about Friday the 13th. By the way, I'm joined in the studio. My co-host Dennis Reimars is with us. Oh, hi, Dennis.
Hi, my mic is on.
Yes, it is.
All right.
Yeah. This is big-time radio. You not only get on the radio, but you get a microphone, too,
for your voice. Yeah, this is a lot better than the last job, yelling from the car.
Yeah.
So this guy gets a call. Superstitious minds want to know, what he thinks.
Right, and his commentary is written up on CNN.com, by the way, if you wanted to see it for today. Basically, he gets on the air and then berates the radio and TV stations for even asking.
Interesting.
It's sort of like my comment about bin Laden and other terrorists and awful people. I don't think we should publicize them. We shouldn't really talk about them. It only encourages other people for their, 5 minutes of fame, mm-hmm. or Andy Warhol, 15 minutes of fame. For Andy, we'll give him 15 minutes,
sure.
But bin Laden, nothing, I think. But it's true that the more it's mentioned, we live in a society that keeps mentioning these superstitions.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're valid or not, they keep being mentioned. Oh, it could be bad luck today, according to some people. And then they mention the few times in history or their own personal anecdotes of when they had bad luck on
sure.
a Friday the 13th. Of course, there's only so many days in the year. There's a lot of bad luck going around.
I was
going
to say, there's probably more than the number of Friday the 13th.
And sure, there's plenty of stories that people have had unfortunate things happen to them on Friday the 13th. I was only mentioning it because I guess I'm never going to mention it again, because I agree with the gentleman is that we should not support, even by mentioning, such kinds of superstitions that are not based in any fact whatsoever, other than pointing out historically, if you go back hundreds and thousands of years, certain bad things did happen on a Friday the 13th. But I bet you could go back in history and do your research and find a Friday the 12th or a Tuesday the 6th or something where there was bad events that happened on that day.
Or maybe there are a couple Friday the 13ths out there that absolutely wonderful things happen.
Right. My personal experience has been Friday the 13th have always been good for me.
Okay.
And that's, of course, what, 3-4 times a year for 65 years. And I paid attention because people say, ooh, Friday the 13th, be careful. Well, how are you going to be careful? I keep thinking about the Final Destination movies, the people that avoided death, but somehow death is going to find them and get them. And there's it's really quite curious and elaborate exactly how these people are fated to die eventually. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a trickle of water, there's a leaky roof, and then the roof falls in, and then it triggers, and then, you know, so it's actually quite ingenious how death or fate or whatever does kill off these people in the course of the movie, and that's the only fascination I have with it. It's just really unfortunate. I don't think things work that way, but that kind of can't escape fate thing, that certainly applies to everyday life, that bad stuff does happen, and you can't quite get out of it.
But do you think that the people that are superstitious are perpetuating bad things? Or do you think, are you one of those people that think, if you think about it enough, it's going to happen?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. If you're all anxious and stressed out, it blocks your thinking, your rational processes.
Sure, you're not resourceful.
Maybe it makes you do things differently than you normally would.
I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Oh, I'm not going to go to my usual place today. I'm going to go somewhere else. Well, and that's where you have your accident.
Probably.
You're trying something new and different, or you're doing it in an anxious sort of way. Mm-hmm. So, of course, and I just bring this up because I realized, and I didn't notice this, but in terms of history of Friday the 13th, the most famous date, they say, that goes back pretty far, is the assassination of the Knights Templar in France. The Knights Templar was the organization that helped get really soldiers involved in the Crusades for the church, and they were just vicious, vicious soldiers.
And of course, there's a lot of legend around that we've seen in movies. The Da Vinci Code,
right?
Didn't that?
It may be that what happened was when they got back from the Crusades, they got into they came back with some of the spoils from the Middle East, some gold and jewels and things, and after a couple hundred years there, I think, or at least 100 years of plundering the area and killing the people that were living there, you might call them Arabs or pagans, but nonetheless. They came back and they were investing and buying land. And, of course, they were honored for their duty by the church, so they were kind of supported by the church in all of this acquisition, if you will. And at a certain point, the church and the King of France said, I think they're getting too powerful.
Exactly.
Before they get more powerful than us, we better get rid of them. And so they came up with what appears to be today completely trumped-up charges against the whole Templar order. On Friday, October 13th, 1307, day will live in infamy.
Sure will.
It's the first day that lived in infamy. Well, one of the first days. On Friday the 13th, of course, but October 13th, 1307, all across France, the king's men of France, King Charles' men, his soldiers, were set to arrest and, if necessary, to kill all the Knights Templar, taking away all their property, all their land, back to the King of France, back to the church. So all their outposts, homes, wineries, mills, castles were taken in the name of King of France and Pope Clement V, who I believe, with all due respect, was one of the most corrupt popes in the history of the church, but go read your history on that.
Sure.
The nationwide arrest was widely successful in medieval torture tactics, were used to obtain confessions from the knights. So what is it called? Extreme rendition or something today?
Right. Yeah, you can get any answer you want if you do it right.
Yeah, if you keep at it. And if they die along the way,
that was kind
of worry about it. Sure. You know, he resisted and he died. The single act against the Templar order is now viewed as one of the most unlucky days in history, Friday the 13th. Now, this is what I didn't know, though. King Philip, did I say King Charles? I'm sorry, King Philip in France, he wanted to get even more publicity about this. So he set up a big public affair in front of Notre Dame Cathedral, which is one of the big structures and the biggest church in Paris, France.
Back then it was even famous,
Oh, of course. It was just beautiful and famous and could house people inside. But outside, he had this huge gathering, and he brought the Templar Grand Master, Jacques de Molay.
Okay.
And this is interesting to me because I was a member when I was young, early teens, of the de Molay order.
Really?
That is a young person's order for boys, not girls, in the Masonic order. So okay. If and my grandfather was a high muckety-muck Masonic officer in the Detroit area, and his wife was in the woman's version.
What is that called?
Now, it's Flowers of the Daughters of the, it's not the Daughters of the Revolution.
No. It's I've the, seen this much earlier.
I can't remember, but
it'll come to you after Hightower.
You know, two fraternal for two orders, and there's one for women, one for men, and the boys. And I'm not sure there's a girls' version of a young girl's Masonic order, but the guys, it's called the De Molay, and I think they still have it around today. And we were taught the history of De Molay, how he was tortured by Catholic Church. You see, that you know, the whole Masonic order is, in its rituals and that, pretty anti-Catholic.
Sure.
But especially the De Molay order, because it was the Templar. I didn't know he was a Templar, a Knights Templar. But Jacques De Molay was the head, the Grand Master of the Knights Templar in France at this time.
Right.
And so, okay, he's been tortured. He signed his confessions about, and this was, you say, well, confession to what? Not just heresy, but they came up with charges that including everything. Asking their members to spit on the cross and step on it to deny Christ, to perform homosexual acts, anything they could think of to justify this massive land grab and power grab. Okay, and just, you know, since there were so many of these, it couldn't all be true. Of course, rich people sometimes get a little corrupt, you know.
Sure.
And, they do things the average person couldn't get away with. But
these guys can't buy their way out of it because the king had more money.
Well, here's the thing. They bring up De Molay in front of his whole crowd to admit his guilt of heresy. Instead, he took to the forum and apologized to the people and the Templar Knights for his weakness and for signing forced confessions. He then rescinded his original confession and testified to the public that he, his men, and all Templar Knights were innocent despite their forced confessions.
Good for him.
Of course, King Philip, they grabbed him, pulled him down, had him burned at the stake.
Right then, probably.
I don't know. It didn't on the time frame, along with his second in command. So how dare they do this? They even have a little artist drawing of the... this is Wikipedia, of course, our great source that may or may not be true. But they even have a little artist drawing of this gathering outside the Notre Dame here. They didn't have photographs in those days, of course. But
interesting.
Good old Jacques. And how crazy was the king to be to put him up there live in front of all these people?
Well, it had worked with the previous confessions, probably.
I mean, he'd already been tortured like crazy, so what the heck? Why not, finally stick it to King Philip and the Pope if he was innocent?
Sure.
And, of course, the other thing that we didn't mention, you mentioned Da Vinci Code. They could have had some knowledge about the original formation, the history of the church, that would undercut the power structure.
Sure.
Like Mary Magdalene was Jesus' wife.
Right.
And maybe she did conceive a female child, and maybe there is a bloodline, and that would just undercut the whole establishment of the church even today and all of their dogma, if it was true, of course, and we don't have hard evidence. We have some evidence, but, you know. Well, I wanted to go to that, and even though I said I shouldn't pass along superstitions, it was a radio broadcaster responsible for this, and maybe you saw it. I asked some of our staff members in the Detroit area who get out and about more often in the Detroit area, and they've seen billboards in the Detroit area that says, save the date, May 21st. Have you seen that, Dennis?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, this is happening nationally. A multimillionaire radio broadcaster who's an evangelical Christian broadcaster, owns many radio stations around the U.S., very rich. He has bought billboards around the country, and he started this campaign called Save the Date, May 21st, to remind people that if they have not been saved, not accepted Jesus Christ specifically as their Savior, that's when the rapture is going to happen.
May 21st.
May 21st.
So
that's a week from tomorrow.
Sure.
So get ready for that. And, of course, they made the bad joke here. Is that, well, it won't affect WHFR's broadcast schedule. So, because in the rapture, all the really good saved people will just, poof, disappear, according to the dogma about this. Not in the Bible this way, folks. It's not really specific, but evangelical Christian interpreters have come up with very different scenarios about the so-called end days and what's going to happen. But the rapture basically is when all of these already saved people just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And but he's also gone further and said that 6 months later, October 21st, it will be the end of everything. And of course, Christ will come back and everything will be destroyed and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's his timeline. So so I'm not suggesting any end of the world parties or any fear or trembling about
that's
this.
That's in 2012.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, if you're worried about the end of the world in 2012, don't be worried. It's going to end in May 21st.
So, yeah, so
this year. So you don't have to wait.
You won't know what hit you.
You know, I was looking forward to December 21st, 2012, just to see what was going to happen.
Oh, me too.
I don't have to wait now because something different may happen on May 21st. Now, this is the same radio broadcaster, though, an evangelical Christian, that also... and I don't believe he's part of any specific religion. He just espouses Christian-type things on the radio.
Cover more ground
on his own radio station. That's
right. He owns.
Convenient way to get on the radio is just buy your own stations or TV or cable or whatever. But he wrote a book in 1994.
Self-published.
Yes. But that the end of the world was going to end then, too.
Oh, in 94?
Yeah, and it didn't. So... But that book is still available, and you just got to change the date a little. It's the same thing. It's going to happen. It's so he made a big push in 94 for this, and it didn't happen.
Does he – and I don't want to give any more time to this.
It's a radio broadcaster.
But I wonder where he got his information. Like, is this something you just bring out of the air, like L. Ron Hubbard, or do you
– Well, we have a great broadcaster who has his show, a syndicated show, not only in Detroit television, but worldwide, Jack Van Impe.
Sure.
JVI Productions, whatever.
Okay.
And he's based in Troy, Michigan.
Okay.
And they do a half-hour show every week, and it's on one of the broadcast stations in Detroit, but also many other places and around the world. And he is not associated with any particular Christian religion, but he and his wife, Roxella, co-host the show. Very low budget, but high production values. And he's written books. He's put out DVDs. Mm-hmm. Talking about the details of the end of the world, because the end of the world is really what he's all about.
Okay.
It's coming soon. And his interpretations are based on really the book of the Apocalypse in the Bible, one of the last so-called books in the official traditional Bible. And he interprets the symbolic things mentioned there as events of the day. Like he thinks nuclear bomb blast and earthquakes and so on, that they're all part of that picture. So when you start accumulating those details, then you just sort of project out the timeline. So, but he's been doing that also for the last 20 years.
What a great way
and
to keep
a career
going.
And it's always been relatively close. Every week there's, of course, bad news and earthquakes and floods and disasters. This is another sign of the end of days approaching.
Right.
Now, he is, I have to say, he's a very personable man, not a fearmonger per se, because, of course, as a Christian, he sees it as the wonderful afterlife when Jesus straightens out everything and all those who are saved will be wonderful. Also, he is, he preaches peace and love for all the different religions.
Okay.
Even though those that aren't saved
are going
to burn in hell.
He's compassionate,
very
merciful.
Very definitely.
Okay.
And so there are other evangelical ministers that are on TV that are not associated with any particular religion but are Christian-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about Joel Osteen here. He's sort of like a self-help guru.
Sure.
But always quotes the Bible a little bit. But he seems like a nice guy, and what he's talking about
polished.
Is
sure.
Yeah, he's talking about things that are all good and positive for people, and he's not pushing a religion, and he's not preaching the end of the world either.
No.
So Osteen is not part of this group, in case you're wondering.
It's Osteen, right?
No,
Joel Osteen.
O S T E E N.
Osteen. Okay,
it's Osteen.
All right, sorry.
Anyway. That's it on that topic. I mean, we got to move on. This is local news and alternative views. But hey, if it's the end of the world, it will affect us locally.
Yeah, so, we do want to know it's coming.
Yes, of course.
So thank you.
What we're concluding here, in case you missed the beginning, is that
now.
Nothing is coming. And because we mentioned it, now you're going to be running scared. But I hope not. Okay, maybe you can comfort other people to not be scared or do something crazy. because of these unfounded rumors or ancient superstitions. Bad things will happen if you let them happen, if you cause them to happen yourself, and so you want to work against that. Okay, in local news in the papers, I just not a lot of big stories. We covered many of them already, but the papers have gone into more depth. In the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, there's an article from, and it looks like it came just from David Mahalab, a retired Detroit police officer who lives in Dearborn Heights, and he, I guess, was formerly with some sort of drug enforcement with the Detroit Police Force, although probably every officer is involved in some kinds of drug enforcement in Detroit, and maybe other places too. He's suggesting that if you see your kids, and this is the, I'm just taking the good part out of this, with a plastic box that has a fabric rose in it, it looks like a gift from a guy to a girl or something, and then it looks like it has a ballpoint pen attached to it, okay, which is clear. It's actually a glass barrel ballpoint pen, okay?
Okay.
So it's like a glass tube.
Sure.
Well, he indicated that these are being sold sort of from behind the counter at various convenience stores and gas stations, and they're used by druggies as crack pipes.
Really?
Because they throw away the flour.
Sure.
That's an excuse. They pull out the refill, and they can use the glass tube, I guess, for, I don't know, sniffing, burning. I don't know what you do. I'm not into that, of course, but that's crazy. So it's just it's not pointed out this way, but cautionary tale. If parents are looking around the house and they actually happen to see their child with one or two of these little pens, they're not just gifts for a friend. And if a mother or father gets them as a present, look out, because that's not what they're intended for. They're used, as he knows, as he said, as Mahalab says, it's clearly for drug users when they're using crack.
And you smoke crack. You do.
I think you smoke it.
I've never done it, but I do know enough. You absolutely do. And the glass, obviously, it takes an extremely high heat.
Yes.
Not enough from a lighter. The lighter will heat the crack to smoke it, but it won't burn the glass. So
It'll probably cool down the smoke as it gets to you. But
I mean, logically,
so we're not recommending this, but you can't buy it over the counter, folks. This is really sneaky.
Yeah.
When you go into these stores, he says you make the letter C with your fingers, your thumb and first finger. And the owner there at the register knows that's what you want.
The code.
C for crack or something. I don't know. It's not for C for rose.
Right.
It's a fabric rose and it's a pen. So
with my luck, I'd go in there and do it. I'd get a calendar or something. And let's face it, there. How many pens have a glass outer?
Yeah. Well, it looks like from the photo they have in the paper, it looks like it might appear to people to be plastic, but it's not.
Okay.
In fact. Yeah.
You're right. Well,
yeah.
It's drug paraphernalia.
Well, watch out for that there.
Yes.
Okay. Nuclear conference is set for tomorrow here at HFCC in our SME building. That's the Society of Manufacturing Engineers buildings that we now own. They occupy a small part of it for their offices still, but it's on the north edge of our campus. A lot of parking there, separate lot from HFCC's. So just, it's a first drive on the right if you're coming south on Evergreen from Ford Road. Dennis informed me there's still places.
As of yesterday, there were still opportunities, yes.
Okay. Now, it will cost $25 if you enroll on the website. If you can still do that, just check out Sierra Club Michigan, and there should be a link there. In person, I think it may be $5 more, $30, but it includes a lunch, and it's 8 full hours all about the nuclear threat to the Great Lakes. And this is not just Sierra Club, Michigan, but Sierra Club regionally in the U.S. and Sierra Club of Canada.
You got it.
And, in fact, half the people speaking during the day, and there's many speakers who really know what they're talking about, will talk about their experiences with nuclear power right here in Michigan and the Great Lakes area. You know, if the Great Lakes get polluted, we're gone, whether Canada does it to us or we do it for them. And so there is a shared concern about this.
Absolutely. And that's what, 9 to 5 tomorrow?
Yes, it starts at 9. Registration opens at 8:30. It starts at 9 and goes till 5 p.m. 8 big-time hours. And I will be there,
students,
I'm not giving autographs.
Students just are on the hook for the lunch for $5.
Yeah. And can students show up at the last minute?
See, now that was a question that they couldn't answer for me.
Oh,
I wasn't positive because you would think, but there were, as you said, there were very limited number, and there weren't very many left at all.
Well, if they have some seats, if you are a student and you want to do some appropriate research, in political science, sociology, physics. call someone.
Chemistry.
Call someone in with the conference. And the story is in Press and Guide 5811. You could probably go to pressandguide.com.
Then go to our website, Jay. It's right on hfcc.edu.
Oh, there it is.
It'll be on the event or the news. Just click on the headline that talks about the conference.
Very good. Thank you for getting that out there. Because it is a college event. It's on our campus.
Absolutely.
But it's not at the conference center, the so-called ASCC Andrew Mazzara Center. It's at the SME building, mm-hmm. Society of Manufacturing Engineers.
Beautiful.
Right at the north part of our campus. Yeah. So that's going to be very important. I already know a great deal about nuclear since I was here when Fermi 1 almost melted down.
Okay.
In Monroe.
And there was a book.
1966.
On it.
Yeah. The book was entitled, We Almost Lost Michigan. No, We Almost Lost
Detroit. Was it the
Detroit.
Day?
We almost lost Detroit.
The day we almost lost? No.
Close. Almost lost Detroit is the key phrase.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And it's still available out there in one place or the other. Of course, Detroit Edison, as they were called then, they're now DTE that runs the Fermi 2 plant.
Right.
Fermi 1 wasn't good enough. And so...
the sequel, right?
Yeah. Fermi 2 was just right next door, although a different design. Fermi 1 was a so-called breeder reactor. That always scares me, that term.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It would produce its own plutonium.
Oh.
Because you never know when you might need some extra plutonium.
Yeah, sometimes you just...
The most dangerous single radioactive element, you know, program in the world.
So they have a plutonium garden? Just going to water it?
Nothing grows around there.
No.
The problem is that, of course, as we said here before, Fermi 1 is completely encased in concrete now, like the Chernobyl plant is.
Yeah.
And it has to stay totally sealed, as if concrete today can last more than 50 years without cracking, but it has to stay totally sealed for 100,000 years. That's longer than recorded human history. The history of, you know, writing and painting, that only goes back 30,000 years. 100,000 years this thing must be sealed, or it will contaminate a large area, depending which way the wind is blowing.
That's amazing. You know, and I owe listeners of the Campus Connection an apology, because we were talking about the conference that mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. tomorrow, and I couldn't remember the exact time that this had to be left alone. And all I said was, I know it's more than 100 years.
Yeah.
Well, so I was technically accurate.
It's because plutonium is so highly radioactive.
Sure.
And what has happened is they were using not water to cool it, but liquid sodium.
Okay.
Under pressure, sodium is can form a liquid. Well, what's happened is those cooling pipes have already ruptured inside the plant because of heat. And so there is sodium gas with the plutonium mixed in that will... You don't need a little leakage into the lake here. All you need is a crack in the containment shell, and a sodium-plutonium cloud will form outside, and then just blow one way or the other. On the very night that it happened in 1966, it was one of those inversion layers. There was no wind whatsoever. And if the shell would have ruptured then when this event happened, and they were just like one or two rods away, one or two more cooling rods, if they would have melted down and become inactive, then the heat would have been enough to rupture the shell. So it was just... fickle luck, you know, that it didn't rupture. But the simple fact is we would have lost not only Detroit, but Toledo and all the way to Ann Arbor, probably 20,000 instant deaths by the next morning.
Sure.
If it would have ruptured then, and a couple hundred thousand deaths over the next 2 weeks, the entire area would have had to been evacuated for at least 50,000 years.
Wow.
All of Detroit. All the way out to Ann Arbor, all the way down, including Toledo, if that... And so that's the particular problem we have, even more than some of these other reactors around the world. This is a breeder reactor, and they're not making them anymore because they're highly dangerous. There have
right.
been deaths reported in breeder reactors even in the 1950s when
sure.
they started using them.
I remember things from Three Mile Island. I remember hearing things, and mm-hmm. I didn't... And of course, I was very, very young.
Right.
But, I mean, was that a similar situation that you know of? Three Mile Island is where?
Well, they had almost had a meltdown there in Three Mile Island.
Same thing.
Also.
Okay.
But it wasn't a breeder reactor, to my knowledge.
No. Okay.
And we won't talk about the China Syndrome, even though that was the movie that Jane Fonda starred in and Jack Lemmon that sort of talked about the nuclear disaster at Three Mile Island. But
right.
It wasn't... directly based on that. And the China syndrome has been debated. That's where the burning, melting heat of the reactor will burn all the way down into the core of the Earth and then continue on to China on the other side.
Right.
That's not going to happen, probably.
No.
That's not the issue with Fermi 1 is the cloud of vaporized sodium gas that has plutonium laced through it that is immediately deadly to people.
Now, somebody had asked me based if the upcoming the conference tomorrow is based at all on what happened in Japan. And I don't think they're related. I think they would have had this either way. But this definitely brings even added significance, don't you think, to this information?
Yeah, there is a smaller fault line. Michigan does not have anywhere near the earthquake danger of, say, California and Japan.
Sure.
The so-called Pacific Rim is very earthquake-prone, and it's only a matter of years before some of those places fall into the ocean because of earthquakes and cracks in the ground and so on. But Michigan does have a small earthquake danger. When I was first hired here, it was either 68 or 69. We had a 4.3 epicenter very close to Detroit.
Had one in 80. In the 80s also, the epicenter was Cleveland, I believe.
Yeah, but I was in my office standing here at the HFCC, and I got a queasy feeling in my stomach, and I had a sensation that all my bookshelves next to me were going to fall on top of
me.
And then all of the faculty sort of stumbled out of their office. Nothing fell. What was that? Was that something?
Well, it was the 60s.
Because the low-level vibration caused by that kind of event, it's not a noise. You don't hear a boom or anything unless something blows up not related to the earthquake. But you will get sort of sick to your stomach or queasy because of that. And, of course, if it's a higher vibration from an earthquake, sure, you'll see the results. Things will fall, buildings will cave in or whatever. But we're not in that much danger here. Unlike the reactor just 70 miles from New York City, that, as Dave Letterman says on his show constantly, and I can't remember the name of that location, but it's their closest nuclear reactor in New York City. It was built on two earthquake faults, not one, but two, just for good measure. You know, so if one doesn't kill the plant, the other one will, and it's only 70 miles.
Isn't that in Connecticut, isn't it? In Wilton, I think. I know there's a naval base in
70 miles. I don't care what state's got it.
Okay.
But, you know, I thought it was up the river from them, you know, the river that comes down to the
Hudson?
The Hudson. I thought it was up the river somewhere, but if that's Connecticut, whatever.
No, that stays in New York,
okay.
But yeah. Okay.
So we do have a threat, and Michio Kaku, who is a crazy name. I love his name.
I do, too.
He's one of the popularizers of physics on television. He has a radio show I just found out today, too. I don't know what regular basis or what, but I saw him on a podcast today on Dr. Kiki's Radio Science Hour.
Oh, no kidding.
And he was talking about the Japanese situation. It's going to take them, by best estimates that he's read, 30 years to clean up the disaster.
Amazing.
And only then, you know, only then can they consider, you know, dismantling it and putting it away. They're still Japanese workers that are going in there, getting their dose of lethal radiation, coming out, and they'll be dead soon. But that's you know, and they're hosing it down with fire hoses from seawater still.
It's still a far better situation than the Fermi one, though. I mean, 30 years as opposed to, 100,000.
Yes, absolutely. But
and that's assuming there's not another earthquake in the next
30 years. That's what he pointed out.
Wow.
If there's any more earthquakes, and there should be some follow-up ones in the next year, because of major earthquakes have follow-up earthquakes.
Sure.
And so they're still in grave danger over there.
Very
grave danger. And it's extremely scary stuff. As he pointed out, even the initiative to build new nuclear plants and maybe not on an earthquake fault for the first time somewhere, it may take 10 years to build them, 10 years to get them licensed and make them get them after testing into commercial production. By that time, the trend with solar is going to be so advanced, it doesn't make sense to use such dangerous, terrible technology. Certainly no more nuclear plants.
Right.
And I know the Sierra Club of Michigan is saying no new coal plants either,
for a
number of other reasons, not radiation. So it's going to be interesting to get even more facts and to hear the ideas and the point of view of our Canadian friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm looking forward to it, at least as a arms-out collaborative thing. And it's pretty high level. It's sometimes the sustainability meetings, they have one or two speakers that have their own personal angle on things, perspective, and but they're not the top-edge people in their field necessarily. They're knowledgeable, but they're not. But this is the top-edge people in this area.
Well, you just brought up sustainability, and I was thinking that on Monday is the next round table, and it's at Fordson this week.
Yeah, this one is at Fordson High School at 5:30 p.m. You're going to get a tour of the school. They have a rebuilt greenhouse, and they have new raised organic gardens.
And this is all student. I mean, the students had played a big part of this. That's I'm anxious
great,
to see it.
Great initiative. And, of course, Fordson is the old classic high school on the east side of town, north of Ford Road, past Schaefer, but it's...
No, it's between Schaefer and Chase.
Okay, Schaefer and Chase, yeah.
It's just a gorgeous
east
building.
Of Schaefer. So it's an agri-science program at Fordson, which we're going to need all that knowledge, environmental science, agriculture, food and program, and...
the fact that it's happening at a high school... is really, to me, that's impressive. And I know that, what's the big deal? Well they've been doing it at U of M. We've been doing it here. Let's start even earlier.
Yep. At this event Monday, they're going to have Jenny Wally, a master gardener, will offer tips on square foot gardening or how to grow more in less space, like maybe your backyard, folks.
Exactly, or rooftop.
Raji Masala, he's a sustainable landscape artist, will present his plans for the Fordson Garden. And congrats to Catherine Mackey, who's the Fordson teacher who helped write the whole program, who helped create the program. She's going to help host the roundtable and serves as advisor to the school's City Beautiful program. So our whole school is going green. So
and there was
it's
a,
about time.
With this particular article, there was a photo attached that there was a young lady that, her name is Maureen, I can't remember her last name, and she was at the meetings that you and I have attended. And she started the garden over by the elementary school. And it got to such a degree, as a private garden on public land, I guess that would make it a public garden, but she got it to the point where she quit her day job because she had to put so much attention into this.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm sure she'll be at a lot of these different things, Maureen. Yeah.
Let's listen to Jim Hightower, a couple of comments about what's going on nationally, and we'll be Dennis and I will be back with more of the local news and important stuff that you can't hear on any other station, WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
If your job paid $50,000 a year and you stayed at it for 47 years, your total tally for a lifetime of work would be $2.4 million. Not bad, but hedge fund hustler John Paulson pulled down that much last year. Most of us would consider an annual income of $2.4 million to be a windfall. But it didn't take Paulson a full 12 months of work to pocket his windfall, or 1 month, a week, or even a day. That's how much he made an hour. Yes, Paulson could have worked one single hour in 2010 and hauled off a paycheck equal to what a typical household gets for a lifetime of work. Now, guess who gets the lower tax rate? The $50,000 a year family or the $2.4 million an hour Wall Street man? Right. Thanks to a loophole big enough to drive an armored truck through, billionaire hedge fund dealers like Paulson escape the usual 35% tax rate, instead paying, at most, 15%. That's more than wrong. It's immoral. In Washington, Wall Street-backed Congress critters are working fervently to kill Medicare and defund everything from education to environmental protection, all on the grounds that the only way to cope with a growing federal deficit is to bulldoze programs that Americans count on. But look behind that lush hedge over there, and what'll you find? The 25 biggest hedge fund dealers who took $22 billion in pay last year. If just these 25 guys were taxed at the 35% rate, Congress would have an additional $4 billion this year to use for filling the deficit hole, rather than gleefully throwing six seniors into it. This is Jim Hightower saying, since 1995, the total income of the 400 richest Americans has nearly quadrupled. Yet the real tax rate they pay has been cut almost in half. America isn't broke. It's being gamed by super-rich tax dodgers.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
To be fair to lawmakers, it's not easy making the tough spending choices in these dire times of rising public need and inadequate tax revenues. Legislators in my state of Texas, for example, are trying to find $27 billion in cuts and new revenue to balance an already miserly budget. So, assume you're a member of the Texas House. What needy constituency would you try to help? School kids? Poor people? Old folks in nursing homes? Or yacht buyers? Yes, yachts. Big yachts, those costing more than $250,000. You might not be surprised to learn that the Republicans, who have a supermajority in the House, went with yacht buyers. Some days when you read the news, you don't know whether to go crazy, go bowling, or just go very far away. And this is one of those days. Representative John Davis, a Houston Republican, passed his bill in committee to give a sales tax break to yacht purchasers. I should note that this tax break is available to anyone, whether rich or poor, so I guess it's fair. But is it really necessary? Using both of his brain cells at once, Davis explains that it is. You see, he says that Florida already provides such a tax giveaway to the yachting crowd, so our state must match it, lest Texans go there for their purchases. Davis proudly adds that he sees his bill as, quote, an economic development measure for our people. Okay, he's a goofball, but were there no adults in the room? The committee chairman just shrugged his sorry shoulders and said the yacht tax break is, quote, one of those things you have to do. This is Jim Hightower saying the House budget will take away college aid for 60,000 students, eliminate nearly 100,000 teachers and other school employees, and shortchange health care for poor people by $14 billion. But we've got your yacht covered. You see, it's simply a matter of getting your priorities straight.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
Going crazy? Going broke? I don't know. Not a lot of good options there, but I guess I can get my pennies together. I think I might buy a yacht now. Of course, it has to be one worth more than $250,000.
I have to tell you, though, I'm not positive that Michigan passed that particular bill, so you might have to go south to get your boat.
Yeah. No, this is, he is talking about, folks, Texas, which is
absolutely
$28 billion in debt. You know, Michigan is $1.8 billion in debt.
And they weren't aware of that till recently.
No,
is that correct?
No, because the governor covered it up in a three-year budget plan. He didn't announce it until the last second how bad they were. And they already have cut schools and everything else they can do. And, of course, their funding priorities pretty crazy. They probably changed. You know, you asked me a couple weeks ago, and I know our senior listeners want to hear this. Texas does not tax pensions.
Okay.
Public or private.
Okay.
On seniors. They might have to start, though.
Yeah.
and let me take a spin back here, and that's just kind of crazy, the yacht exception for people buying yachts in Texas. And, you know, there's so much, so many people that use the water in Texas, and it's good. There isn't any, folks. There's a couple little lakes. You can't put a yacht on them because the lakes don't go anywhere. You know, anyway, and they run out of water every July and August. I went down there once in June to Austin, and there's a big lake that's part of Colorado River, but it's a lake. Sort of, and they have river tours. They have these boats that, you know, glass bottoms and real nice. Well, they had to cancel the tour for 3 days because we're in a drought.
Yeah.
They're right now experiencing, they're experiencing probably a 10-year drought. It's terrible down there. There's wildfires that have swept across Texas. They've asked for government aid. Government aid? Rick Perry, their governor down there, is asking for government aid. He's so against government aid.
Sure.
But he'll accept it when the wildfires are beyond the scope of what they can contain with their own people. Yeah, why not then? Sure. Who knows what's going on there? But how in that disastrous situation of a budget in Texas, they still have a committee that votes for a discount, a tax incentive for people that want to buy yachts costing more than $250,000. I just can't believe that. But oh well. What was the segue? I had a great segue in mind here from that. I want to mention, it's a radio thing, and I'm going to mention it because it's not available anywhere else. This morning, from 9 to 10 o'clock, Michigan Public Radio and WDE in Detroit carried this, a live call-in interview with Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan.
Okay.
And it was fantastic. He was at WKAR Studios in Lansing. And I thought, oh, this is just great. And a lot of questions, and he has a lot of intelligent answers.
Sure.
He's a little bit like, in terms of the way he answers questions, Mayor O'Reilly. He gives an answer, and he pretty direct in that. And then he gives reasons. He gives statistics. He gives research.
Qualifies it, sure.
Right. Now, not all the research in the world, and you can disagree with some of the interpretations, and certainly I disagree with several of his policies in for Michigan, although we certainly need renewal ideas. But he is a very conscientious conservative. He really is. He's very thoughtful and meticulous and tries to get the research, and he shares it as much as he can.
Sure.
So, I was going to tell you folks when you could listen to that again if you missed it. Nowhere. It's
really?
Not archived at DET.org. It's not archived at WKAR.org. I went to Michigan Public Radio Network, Rick Pluta, and the key reporter there who did the interview, and he was a good, challenging interviewer, too. He really, he didn't attack the governor, but he asked a really tough follow-up questions.
Excellent.
To the emails and the phone calls that came in.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. And so I wish everybody could hear that, and I didn't record it because I thought, they must be archiving that somewhere. Nowhere. Now, the only place I didn't check is Michigan.gov, the state website, that maybe the governor has that archived, because I think it would be to his credit for that, because I didn't know this was happening. I listened to the WT. I didn't know this was coming up this morning.
Right.
I didn't get an email from them about the special show.
But that's always been Snyder's way. I mean, he just shows up. You notice that? This could have been a
maybe
spur of
it
the
happened
moment
quickly.
Thing.
They actually bumped their regular news show. It's on from 8 to 10 on WDET. That comes nationally,
right?
And
this could have been a last second thing. It could have been anything.
But it's not available anywhere. So that's not very wise in this media world. If Snyder came back to WH, we still got his.
That's unheard of in this
media. We still
media
got the
world.
Snyder interview from last year archived still on our website.
Plus,
excuse
I memorized
me.
It. I'm just kidding.
Where the heck is it here? It was July 2nd. Last year, 2010, and if you just go to WHFR.fm and you click on forum, and you can hear Rick Snyder right here in person on the Journal. He was running for the Republican nomination for governor of Michigan then. He hadn't gotten that nomination.
Oh, that's right.
We interviewed him because he seemed to be an outsider, like he didn't have a chance.
The alternative.
Against Andy Dillon. That's right. And,
of course,
he went
we
on
Bonero.
To win. And we had Bonero the week or the month before. That was June 13th, 10. So,
in the studio
right here. So, I wish I could say more than what I did. He is a thoughtful person. But by golly, when he gets it in his mind to go a certain direction, that's what happens. And as you know, all of his tax proposals, they not only went through the House by 10 votes, but they did pass the Senate just a day or so ago in Lansing by one vote. His lieutenant governor had to slide in to break a tie. So talk about close. There is not unanimous support for his plans, but yes, seniors will get their pensions taxed. He just has to sign the bill now, which I'm sure he'll do in a day or two, as well as all the other proposals that we've talked about here that he wanted, he got.
Let me ask you something.
Of course,
something.
He has a majority of the Republican Party in both houses, so why shouldn't he get it? It's just that it was close.
Let me ask you, now, when you listen and you said he's very thoughtful and that he will come out with an answer and then he will support it with various arguments.
Yes.
When you listen to his arguments, do they make sense to you? I mean, do you at least, because I know you have an open mind about most of these, and do you look at them and go, well, I don't necessarily agree with the policy, but his arguments, there's merit. Do you look at it that way, or do you ever think, that's just ridiculous, this isn't going to work?
No, as an open-minded person, I think it's worth a try. I pointed out about the pension issues after I did my research. Most states tax pensions, public and private pensions, not Social Security. We're not talking about taxing Social Security. I don't think anybody does. Any other state taxes that, but maybe they can't, in fact. I don't know. But and even our tax rates, we're not the highest state in taxing anybody, whether it's
kind of
businesses or people. Yeah, we're like 24th out of 50 the last time the Michigan Tax Foundation came up with its numbers. And so, and even with his changes, we're not going to be worse than, what did I check out, Maine, state of Maine, even Vermont. Now, Vermont has that side benefit, and I picked this up too, and that is they're very close to enacting their own single payer health care plan for residents of Vermont.
Wonderful.
And it's everything that should happen for the world as a whole. Well, everything that happens in other countries other than the United States. Okay. So that everybody gets coverage. Everybody is taken care of. No extra payments, no extra money. Sure, you pay more taxes. So sure. Vermont is not the cheapest in taxes, but property tax, income tax, pension tax. But now they're going to provide this to their residents. Now, there aren't that many residents, so the total cost is not going to be that high. But still,
it's a start,
it's better than the one in Massachusetts that Mitt Romney was trying to explain in Ann Arbor yesterday or the day before.
All right.
Or was it Tuesday? But anyway.
Well, I'm just saying that. I mean, you've always said, and you know, I definitely agree that let's take the fare tax, for instance. If it starts with one state and it proves it works, then it will be a little bit more contagious. And then who knows when on the federal level. So at least Vermont's...
Yeah. Yeah, I want to, back to your question, to answer your question, I think Snyder's plans are certainly moving us to try new things.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm not saying in a good direction, because we don't know the consequences of these things. But
right.
At least he's getting pretty much his proposals. They're not piecemeal. They're not attacked. They're not compromised. He's getting them in place pretty much the way he envisioned they should be in place.
And he's not wishy-washy at all. I mean, he's very,
right.
Like you said, he puts his mind to it, right?
Right. So, I mean, that's the plan with what has been called Obamacare. That's the problem with it, in my mind. It was attacked. It was undercut. It was compromised. It ensures a lot more people, and I'm all for that. And it has some reforms so that, like, if you get sick, the company can't say, oh, you're a risky bet. We're going to kick you off insurance now.
Right.
Well, that's just crazy, folks. You know, and so they've improved all kinds of things about even private health care insurance by the so-called Obamacare plan. But it's not good enough. It doesn't cover everybody, and it will not contain rising medical costs. You know, we're paying a lot more in this country for health insurance, private or public, than any other country in the world, than most other countries of the world, and we're not getting the quality results. It's that simple. And we have all these people uninsured.
Right.
Which is just not fair. It's just not compassionate. And
without the reform, it won't bring it down to an affordable level.
Well, we got to cover everybody.
Sure.
First of all. And, and they say, well, you're forcing insurance on people that don't want it. Who doesn't want health care as a basic element of life?
Absolutely.
You know, you pay the government, but it doesn't mean that the costs are going to be higher. As I now got a libertarian sticker on the back of my car.
Do you?
Well, I mentioned on the show, I'm a member of the Libertarian Party officially. I'm a member of the Green Party officially, right, just to get the information flow, which is hard to get other ways. And I have been a member of the Democratic Party in the past, but no longer. And Republican Party, no, I can't say I've ever been part of that officially. Oh my God. Libertarians will be totally against a single payer health care plan,
yep,
in spite of all the facts about how it does work. Nothing's perfect, but it does work for majority, all but us in the civilized world. And yes, it's costly. Yes, it raises our taxes instead of paying healthcare premiums to
other
ways.
So in the end,
it's
still cheaper.
Yeah, and it's like prescription drugs. Well, this whole hassle of finding the right plan and then still paying money every month. And no, in Canada, they get a prescription for a drug from the doctor. They go and they get it filled. No cost at all. No deductible. No cost. Not at all. Doctor's visit. No cost. Not at all. No. Excuse me. That's the way it should be. That way you will get the care you need. Maybe extraordinary procedures, high-tech stuff where you're going to have to wait a while for.
Right.
But I said, you know, no system is perfect.
And they went through their rough spots in the beginning, yeah, but it took a little time, and now it's a lot more.
Former governor of Vermont, presidential candidate for a time, and his name, of course, is sliding away from me now. He's a doctor. himself.
Oh, I remember.
His wife's a doctor.
Right.
He was former governor of Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he has written a book, along with many other people, that single-payer universal health care, that's the plan that should happen.
I know what you're talking about.
And, of course, he was sort of laughed out of the contention for the last presidential nomination because when he won a primary, he went during his press conference after and said, whoopee, or something.
Yeah, right.
Said, well, there's a nut job.
Right.
He was so happy. I mean, give me a break. The media destroy people. Oh, well. Their senator, one of their two senators from Vermont, every state only has two senators. That's a trick question, right?
Okay.
How many senators does the state of California have? Only two, even though they're big. Well, one of their senators, Bernie Sanders, is an independent. He's not a Democrat. He's not a Republican. Talk about a loose cannon. No, he's basically a progressive. So he has written a book. In fact, he did the longest filibuster in history, talking about all the problems in our country and how government can get a few things right, like universal single payer. That book is out now. Bernie Sanders. It's called The Speech.
Okay.
And it is his 8-hour speech.
Oh, really?
Typed up.
Like a transcription?
Every time you make a speech in Congress, there is an official record that's kept.
Sure.
The congressional record is called.
Okay.
But they have a stenographer, somebody, they're transcribing it right there. So he does thank in the introduction. He thanks that person for sitting there 8 hours. I guess they had to take shifts, and they kept all of his words. I don't know if he ad-libbed some. He had an outline.
Well, I was going to say, if he wrote it down, that would have saved the transcription process.
Right, but he's written another article here about single-payer health care. And, I hope that that the issue, when it comes up again by Republicans, will be looked at, and even libertarians can get off their dogma to see something that works. No single dogma or theory is going to work 100% of the time.
No.
The universe, Michio Kaku here I'm quoting,
sure,
is too chaotic, too unknown to let anything that's a human theory work 100% of the time. Okay? And so we have to find the things that work, and I think we have to move ahead with those plans. And I hope Republicans and Democrats can look at new ideas and try them, but also see the things that are already working, like universal single-payer health care in the rest of the civilized world.
Right.
And
without getting scared, looking at Germany and saying, well, you know, you can take the good parts of what other people
exactly
are doing.
If we're designing it, we can take the good parts of the Canadian system, the French system, and let's, you know, the French do have the best health care system in the world,
mm-hmm,
at the lowest, at one at much lower cost than we have. Maybe we could, you know, talk to them. Maybe somebody could learn French. parlez-vous? Let's see. Other things here, and it's only 4 minutes away before Highway 61 gets started. How the time flies. Couple interesting things I can't go into, but maybe you can look it up, folks. Noam Chomsky. Noam Chomsky, that's C-H-O-M-S-K-Y. Also a great scholar, very much a progressive liberal. He has a reaction to bin Laden's death, which I can't share now. And that, along with a story about Texas, here's Texas again, they've just voted to allow concealed handguns in public universities. Yep. Yep.
It doesn't make
that
sense.
Way when the snipers and the serial killers come out, everybody can pull out their weapons and start shooting back.
Right.
So that's only fair, right?
Well, yeah. Because it happens so often.
Yeah, exactly. And again, for concealed carry down there, they demand for their license of concealed carry in Texas training.
Okay.
But the point I made is that the people that have guns that decide to just put one in their pocket without that license, they don't have to be trained in how to use them or how to shoot straight or what the laws are. Or, oh, my gosh, I'm so scared of that. You know, that's a government thing. But, I'm in favor of the kind of licensing we have now, and I know it doesn't include all the illegal guns that people can pick up anywhere. But if we're going to license, let's train them. Let's make that required, just like we do for a driver's license. And if they already know the laws and the rules. We're not talking about much training here. We're not talking like a driver ed course. The current program in Michigan for people that want to try to get the concealed carry permit is only about 8 hours long.
Okay.
8 hours of instruction. And but I think there should also be, when they come back to the police department, I think they should be given a chance to see if they hit some targets.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. Just like a driver ed course, take you out for a road test.
Right.
Well,
there's theory and then there's
practical. Let's see if you know how to use your gun, really. Yeah, sure. Not just textbook stuff.
What country is it, Switzerland, that has an incredibly low crime rate, and it has a law that basically is what you're saying, that you can have guns, but you're required to know how to use them. Mm-hmm. Is it, I believe it's Switzerland. And the theory is that if somebody wants to break into your house, there's a very real possibility that you're prepared. That's scary.
Yep. Dearborn Press and Guide, it was a slow news week from Wednesday. They talk about, the contract, the new teacher contract that cuts their pay for 2 more years, sets a school calendar. And, of course, the radical idea that the teachers get to choose their health care provider, which has been here at Henry Ford Community College for about 30 years and is a great idea finally happening. They now have a calendar for the next 2 years. It's built into their contract. Well, excuse me, here at Henry Ford Community College, our union negotiated a calendar for the whole 3 years every year. But they never did at the public schools. They would just let the administration, him and Hahn, and finally like a month or two. So that the parents never knew when a spring break or how many days off the kids would have until like the last minute. So, a new breakthrough for the K-12 contract. Oh, give me a break. Aren't they taking notes on what we've been doing over here? I guess they are, because it now has happened.
Right, better late than never.
But they're going to have a full week in February every year, instead of like, it's like spring break. Okay. So they're going to get more, but they're going to stay later in December, closer to Christmas, but they're going to get a whole week off in January. And I'm thinking, sounds familiar to me. Oh, that's the college calendar here. Sure. At Henry Ford Community College, a full week for spring break and, you know, a little closer before Christmas. We are in session here with final exams, a little closer, but we don't usually come back until the first week in January.
No, you know, more likely what happened was so many non-traditional students came back to school, and their kids are in school, so they matched it.
No, the fact is they're getting in step with the other school districts in the area, not just college.
Okay.
But the Wayne community, the Wayne RISA or whatever, the Wayne County districts, they're all combining their schedule so that everybody is off on breaks at the same time. I don't know how that helps, but I guess it does. Okay, so we're going to move. One nice thing, and I hope to see him in person. Maybe we'll get him on the show here. The Memorial Day Parade here in Dearborn.
Okay.
They selected the Grand Marshal to ride in the car and also do a keynote address afterwards. Adrian Cronauer.
Okay.
Dennis is looking at me blankly here.
No, I just...
Okay,
sure.
Adrian...
I'll let you tell.
Adrian was the character that wrote a book about his adventures as a broadcaster with the Army in Vietnam.
Oh.
And they made the movie Good Morning Vietnam, starring Robin Williams. And he played Adrian Cronauer.
Sure.
But Cronauer, after he came back, he did several things, became a lawyer and other stuff. But he also wrote a book and even taught a class part-time on media production.
No kidding.
And media performance. How to be